Next on News for the Soul, Indigenous Perspectives with Diane. Diane Hill is a member of the Bear Clan of the Mohawk Nation, situated at the Six Nations of the Grand River Territory in Ontario. She works as an integrative programs consultant at the Real School Leadership Program. She's also the director, owner, and operator of a private healing lodge and learning center focused on healing and fostering emergence of the good mind. Her passion is to teach, empower, and bridge the Western allopathic scientific perspective with the ancient, indigenous, multidimensional approach to wholeness. Please welcome Diane back to News for the Soul.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. It's my pleasure today to have my guest, Liz Akowenzi. Her Anishinaabe name is Nisitunkwe. It means, in English, just generally speaking, understanding woman. Liz is an Ojibwe and Oneida cultural educator and healer. She uses traditional medicine, ceremonies, and teachings in her work with First Nations people. So I'm happy to have Liz as a guest today, and we're going to chat about a topic called award giving. And I'm going to interview Liz on her perspective on whether this was an honor or a checkbox, the award that she just recently received. So welcome back to Indigenous People's Perspective, Liz. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Thanks for joining us today to come on and have a chat about your recent award that you received from Fanshawe College. I believe you're the 2024 Distinguished Alumni Award recipient. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about that award. Obviously, you went to Fanshawe College. Can you bring us up to date?
So probably about 34 years ago, I attended Fanshawe College and went into the social service worker program. And believing that I needed to get some level of education so I could care of my children. And it was quite the journey to be here. I was the only Native person in my program. Out of, I think there must have been like 35 of us in that program. And I found it really difficult to be there because everything that I was learning, it did not connect with me, and having to challenge some of the things that they were teaching me. And so it was interesting, you know, for me to be in such a place. It was a scary place. I wasn't comfortable. I didn't feel safe, but I knew I had to do it for the benefit of my children.
So it's interesting when you started off your talk here a moment ago when you said, At that time I believed I needed to have an education, a mm-hmm. college diploma or some kind of maybe university degree. Is that belief changed?
Everything that I learned here and now what I know and believe and understand today, it was my cultural knowledge, and all the work that I do is culturally based. Everything I learned from the old ones, going to ceremony, listening to the teachings, going to different gatherings, doing my healing of the trauma that was in my life, clearing that pathway, because I had believed back then is that I wasn't smart enough, I wasn't good enough, and I must be so stupid, and that non-Native people were smarter than me. And then going through that system, I realized that they didn't know anything about me, didn't know anything about my people, and realized how much they didn't know, and yet they're trying to tell us how we're supposed to live our lives and what we're supposed to do. And it didn't fit for me. And so the biggest thing I learned is, yeah, I can learn their ways of being, but our cultural way of being is holistic, our cultural way of healing and wellness, our cultural way of seeing the world, our history is the other thing that I learned from the old ones, and moving forward to that and understanding my parents and understanding myself to be a better mother, to be a better sister, a daughter, auntie, a grandmother at this point in my life, and a better helper to my people. So did I really gain anything from being in this institution? Not really. You know, I gained more from my cultural knowledge, and that's how I've gotten all of my work out there in the world, is through my cultural knowledge and my huge belief in our medicines and our ceremonies and our well-being. And so do I need Western society's education? No.
And so this award then, it was something, I know when I was talking to you, when I first heard the news, and then I sent you a message and I congratulated you, and then when I phoned you up and I was saying, hey, you didn't share with me that you had received this award, and then you said, well, I kind of had mixed feelings about it because I'm not really that happy about it, you said. So I was just wondering what your perspective was on, if you could share that, what we talked about.
Well, number one, somebody posted it on Facebook and I didn't know about it, and all these people are giving me feedback, oh, congratulations, this is really good. And I'm going, okay, I don't think this is a big deal. And so that's when I called you, and it goes, okay, it's not a big deal to me, because what, am I a checkbox for Fanshawe College? Am I just going to be their poster woman to bring more Aboriginal people into this institution? You know, and the other part of this celebration that they're having is that they're having a bar there the night of the celebration and whatever award they're going to give me. And so somebody contacted me and said, well, you know, there's cocktail hour and then we'll have the presentation. And I says, cocktail hour, what is that? And she says, oh, there'll be drinks and people can have drinks, whatever. And I went, well, I won't be attending because I'll be wearing my traditional regalia. And I'm not going to disrespect myself, my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandbabies. I'm not going to disrespect my mother, my parents, my family, my community, or my nation. Because if I'm going to wear my traditional regalia, I'm not to be around alcohol. And she goes, oh, well, you can just come like after it. And I went, no, you don't understand. I'm not going to be around other people if they have alcohol in their system. That's not okay for me. So I won't be coming. So I had to think about that, and I felt, number one, is that I was being an object and not a human being is probably one way of looking at it. And the other thing, they didn't talk to me about how this was going to be, and I wanted to be able to share the understanding that being in that institution was scary. It was not good. It was not fun. And I'm not here to be a poster person for this college. And it just felt uncomfortable, and it didn't feel good for me. And again, it was another way of going, oh, we'll just go do this because this is how we do it. And they never talked to me, and they never asked me, and nobody, the head people that organized this, didn't call me until I emailed them and asked, I need to talk to somebody about this. And they never did get back to me. Still haven't, but that's okay.
And they still haven't, huh? So what did she say to you, the Fanshawe person, when you said, well, I don't want to be around alcohol. I can't be around.
I told them a little bit about the historical impact when it comes to education. And she goes, oh, well, I'll go talk to my supervisor. He goes, you do that. And somebody contact me and let me know what you are going to do. And they didn't. So then I did an email to her again. I go, nobody contacted me. What's going on? Somebody needs to talk to me. So her supervisor emailed me and said she was going to have a meeting with the First Nations Center and talk to the person that works here. And I went, excuse me, if you're going to have a meeting, I need to be a part of that meeting, and I don't need anybody to speak for me. And so then I contacted the First Nations person that works here, and he had told them that he wasn't going to talk to her until he talked to me. So since that time, him and I had a conversation. He says, yeah, well, you don't need to go. He says, we'll have a different celebration. We'll have it the way that we do it. Let's have a ceremony. And I says, yes, let's have ceremony. So the First Nations Center and the man who oversees this place, we're going to have ceremony. I'm going to have a pipe ceremony. I'm going to have my friends and my relatives that supported me when I was going through that stage of my life and all of the work that I've done. And I want, and to celebrate the opportunities I had because of my cultural knowledge, not because of what Fanshawe gave me, my diploma. And I'm going to have a feast going to have a pipe, going to have a giveaway, because it's really important for me. Because the other thing, it's not just about me. It's about myself, my children, my family, my community, my nation, and all First Nations people across Turtle Island. Because it felt like I was being a little token, and that they wanted to show off and say, look what we've done to this woman, for this woman. You know, we gave her a chance to come to our college. We gave her a diploma. Excuse me. And about, look how successful she is. And look at all the work that she's done. But the work that I've done has nothing to do with the diploma. It has to do with who I am and what I believe in my people.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, and that sounds much more in line with who you are as I've known you, and what you've done, even for the people, because a lot of, if you look back 34 years ago, culture wasn't even acknowledged, right? It, let alone, you know, spoken about too much. It was kind of like back there 34 years ago, it was like it was shameful to be Native, or, you know, the push back then, I think, over speaking generally, overall in mainstream culture was to assimilate. It was still about assimilating Native people. It was still about come to school here and you can be like us, or you can be one of us, and you're going to need to have this paper. I can, like, a lot of people bought into that back then, and I think you were all along trying to bring culture into your classes, into your assignments, and into the things that you did. And is that right? Did you not make an attempt to try and bring that forward?
Because even when it was time for my graduation, one of my instructors told me I couldn't wear my traditional regalia to graduate. The interesting thing about this story is there was a number of us sitting at one table, and he was sitting at another table. And he came right over to my table and says directly to me, don't think you're going to wear your traditional regalia when you graduate. And I just looked at him because, number one, I wasn't talking to him. He interfered in our conversation. My classmates told me, well, you have to abide by the Fanchal's policy. And I says, what is this? Let's oppress Liz Equinzi Day? I go, I don't think so. This is my country. This is my land. I didn't come from no place else. So we went back to the classroom, and the instructor, who is my friend and is still my friend today, he says to me, go down to the registrar's office and see if that's their policy. And I went down, and there's no such policy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I says, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to wear my traditional regalia. And so I went and spoke to the other instructor that told me that. And he says to me the next day when I went to his office, I says, you had no right to say that to me. He says, oh, I was just being flippant. And I says, I suggest that you don't never be flippant with Liz Equinzi again. And he's going, oh, I've been teaching Native people for 15 years. I goes, I really don't care. I goes, I will wear what I need to wear. I don't need you to tell me that I can't. Who are you? You know, and,
or to give you permission.
And
right?
For me, it was, I didn't even know what the word flippant meant that time. I had to go look it up.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was the thing is who are, and number one, it was a man telling me I couldn't. So when I went to healing around that, what came to me was around, here's another white man telling a Native woman what she can't do or what she can do. And I thought, no way, man.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I graduated, my other friend who was one of my instructors, and if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have made it through that system. So when I graduated, he was giving the diploma. So when I wore my traditional regalia and I was walking across the stage, and when he called me up, he said, Nisit Tong Kwe. And that was one of the most highlights in my whole life, to be acknowledged in that way. And then when I walked across and the dean gave me my diploma, and it was a female at that time, she says, you look very beautiful. I'm very happy for you. I went, thank you. And when I wore my regalia, I took the gown that we're supposed to wear. I put it over my arm, and I respected the college.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that represented. And I will forever be proud of myself for doing that. So it changed my life. And what changed my life is walking across that stage and hearing my name, Mystic Tong Kwe. So that was
beautiful.
Just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was there and my daughters were there. And at that time, the father of my children And so it was important, and I'm glad that my girls got to see that. And then years go by, and my oldest girl took the same program, and when she graduated, she wore her traditional regalia also and didn't get no flack from no one. So, you know, those things are important, but somebody has to go first, and I didn't realize how big or how important that was until years and years and years later. But
that's
to
right.
this day, in the Social Service Worker Program, the man who runs that program today has told his students and told his faculty, you don't let Liz Ekwensi go into your class. She's not allowed. So
really?
I don't know who this
to
man
this
is.
Day?
I've never met him. I don't know who he is. I only know his name. And but no, he made it very clear. Does not want me to go speak in the Social Service Worker Program here. And it's like, oh, well, not hurting
wow.
my feeling.
Wow. How did you find
that
out?
Because the students came and told me.
Oh,
because
all because
students that were in that program, and
yeah,
because
you're an elder there, right?
Yeah.
Is that how you you knew you're an elder at the Indigenous Services Center? Oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah, and so when they came, and that's what they told me. They go, oh, the head of the Social Service Worker Department says they don't want Liz Ekwensi to be in the classroom. But anyway, I helped this one young girl, and she got through the program, and we did a teaching video together. And it was work for her to get through that program, and I get that, how hard it is to get through that. So anyway, she did make it. She did go through, and I just think that was just awesome for her to do that. So isn't that interesting, eh?
Yeah. Oh, well, even that the person is still there after so many years. Talking, like you said, about 34 years ago when it was you went through. And then didn't you also break some barriers too in terms of how to do like a test or an exam? Didn't your professor I can't remember his name, assist Denny
was the one that supported me because when he would teach me. And then when I would do the tests, I would fail. I couldn't do it. So he came to me and he says, Liz, he says, I know that you know this stuff because we talk about it in class and I hear you talking about it. And I says, I don't know what happens to me when you put that paper in front of me. I go blank. I just freeze. And he says, well, I'm gonna ask you if you're willing to do a oral test. And I said, sure. And so we did that and I passed it. And he says, I know that you know this. He says, I don't understand why you can't put it in writing. And I go, I don't know either. But I didn't know at that time. But years went by, and I found out it was because of the physical abuse and the emotional abuse of the nuns when I was in public school.
Yeah,
and
that's right. I remember.
They would hit me, and they would slap me, and they would pull my hair and tell me I was stupid. I'd never amount to anything. I'd become a drunk and have a bunch of kids and live on welfare. And they would talk like that in front of me and tell each other, oh, well, she's just a stupid Indian girl. She'll never amount to anything. So when they put that paper in front of me, now I know why I froze. I became that little wee girl. If I didn't color in the line or if I wrote my name and I was off the line, they would come and hit me. So that was, but I didn't know it back then. And then to this day, Denny Gidwa is still my friend. And I shared that with him. And what that felt like for me, he says, oh, I didn't know that. And I goes, well, I didn't know that either. But I remember him saying to me that, you know, I need to find out what happened to me without him even knowing that he planted that seed inside of me that somewhere along my life I needed to find out what that was. But I became small, too. Even when they would want to help me, I would get mad and get because I was scared. And I had to tell him that. I goes, when I was seemed like I was angry at you, wasn't I? Because I was scared because here's another white man telling me what I need to do or not do. And I goes, and to me that represented the priest. But again, I wasn't consciously aware of it at that moment, at that time. It wasn't until years later. But one of the things I respect about Denny was that he truly seen something in me that I didn't. But he says, I knew that you wanted this. I seen it in you that out of all of the people in your class, you wanted this. I knew you wanted it. And I goes, you're absolutely right, I did. But he says, I also honor you because you challenged me in some of the things I was teaching because I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I truly respect that. And usually you don't challenge any professors or because they're the teachers and you're the student, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he respected that about our working relationship at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's pretty darn awesome.
There, in addition to Denny, you had a friend named Judy, and
mm-hmm.
Judy, she wasn't Native, but tell me a little bit about your friendship with Judy, because she was part of your journey too, yeah. In helping you through.
Yeah, she was in my class, and we became friends, and there was three other women also, but her and I probably stayed connected the longest out of the four of us, and when I had to go speak to the instructor, the one that told me I couldn't wear my traditional regalia, she came with me and she supported me in that. And, you know, back then, again, we just did what we thought was right. And I'm really grateful that she has always supported me. And she says, you know, all as I knew is that something didn't feel right. All as I knew is something wasn't right about how they treated you, but I didn't fully understand about racism, whatever, because she's a non-Native woman. But she says, but something I felt about that. And when we would talk through the years, and we're still friends today, and because she had her own journey also about her life. And even after we graduated, we would see each other and be in different places. I would ask her about, what do white people think about us? Or how come they don't ask questions? How come they don't want to know about us, eh?
Yeah.
She goes, I
yeah.
think they're just scared. They don't know what to ask, and they're scared of asking the wrong questions, so they don't ask. I goes, well, weren't we taught that asking questions? How are you going to learn about somebody if you don't ask questions? And so
yeah.
over the years, her and I were able to sit over the years and sit and ask each other these different questions. So she was kind of like, you know, helping me to understand about how non-Native people think and what did they think about us, about the First Nations people. So that's been a really good understanding. So, again, she has her own story about why she went into social work. And then she says to me, she goes, I've learned so much from you. She goes, our societal ways of being isn't holistic, and it isn't about looking at yourself or healing yourself or and how that affects yourself, your children, and your family and your community. We're not taught that. We're just taught to live in our heads and not
mm-hmm.
to look at it. If something happened in the past, leave it there and don't talk about it, don't think about it, don't feel it. But she now today she's learning that's not the truth because of her own trauma and her own life story. So
wow.
I'm grateful to her and always will be, you know, for her support and her understanding. But the thing is that she was sincere about her support for me. She didn't get anything out of it except feeding our friendship. And I think, how can you not honor, you know, such a friend? So
mm-hmm.
I truly am grateful to her.
That's awesome. That's an awesome story. So I just did a little bit of math here, and I subtracted 34 years from 2024, and I got around your experiences around 1990. And we're talking about racism in the 1990s, but we're also talking about, it's interesting because recently an Enoch Cree woman by the name of Ashley Collingbull won the Miss Universe Canada title. And I was listening to a podcast to her, a little bit of her story, and she was commenting about the first time she applied and she competed in that competition of Miss Universe was she was 20 years of age. So that takes her back to 2010. So that's years later after you go through your racist experience at school. And then Ashley Collingbull comes along and kind of breaks up all these barriers and becomes Miss Universe Canada. And it was so interesting because the interviewer asked her, he said, what was your experience like 20 years ago? And she said, it was a racist experience. She said, I was 20 years old. I didn't know, you know, about the competition. I didn't know, you know, I didn't have the training. I didn't have the dress. I didn't have, you know, I didn't have certain things because she said, I didn't know. And she said when she was in the competition, a newspaper, I can't remember if she mentioned which newspaper, but she said it was a media that actually brought out the racist comments toward her. because she said when she was going through the competition, there were lots of Native people who came out to support her, but what they had read, the newspaper story, and the newspaper story made a comment about, you know, well, what is Miss, this is Ashley Collingbull, the first indigenous woman to compete for the Miss Universe title. What is she going to use as her talent? Is she going to chug a gallon of Lysol or something like that? I forget what it, and the other one was, and sign welfare checks with her toes. And she said people, she was aghast. She said at 20 years of age, to see that written in a major news meet, like a newspaper, mm-hmm. a news meet, to see that story coming out about her, you know. And so she was commenting about that. And years later now, she wins the title coming back. She's now 34. Then she was 20. And so she won it this round. But, you know, she said, I learned from that experience. I went out and I came out of the stage and I looked out onto the audience, and there was lots of Native people who were cheering her on and supporting her because they read that story. They came across those comments, eh? So they wanted to come and support her and give her that support or cheer you on, right? To keep going, the encouragement to keep going. And so you had Denny, you had Judy, you know, she had a bunch of Native people come. I'm sure that many of those were her family and friends as well, because that's just how we do things with family and friends. And it's just amazing when you think from that period of time and all those years, eh, like 34 years ago to today, really how much has changed, eh, in terms of the general public view.
Yeah, because the other part of that is my daughter, my oldest daughter, she was, I was the first one in my family to graduate college. My daughter was the second one, and my oldest daughter was the first one of the grandchildren to graduate from university. My younger sister was the first one to graduate from university. So I think about that and how important that is. And I never thought about it back then. All as I knew is I wanted a better life, and I believed in the colonized dream, get an education, get a job, and all these things will be easier if you act like us. Whatever, that wasn't the case. But the thing about this is that how it paved that road for my children. So now my youngest son and my oldest daughter both got university education. My middle daughter works in another college because of her cultural knowledge. And she went to college and she graduated. And so I think about those kinds of things. My grandson graduated from university. He's a language teacher. He's a dad now. He speaks the language. My two granddaughters are in university. You know, so it's all of those kinds of things, and that's what feeds my hope. And that's why I wanted to be at this gathering, because it's important that my grandbabies hear my story.
Yeah.
And for my children, my adult children, to see and to hear, it wasn't easy for me to do that back then. It was hard. And, you know, my kids also kind of paid the price, because I was it was so difficult for me to be there. And my middle son would probably appreciate it the most, because I would sit every Thursday night at 7 o'clock, I can guarantee it, I'd be sitting at the table and I'd be crying, and he'd be on the other side of the table doing his homework. And he came over to me and he says, Mom, he goes to school this hard, eh? And I just hugged him and I cried. Because he too was struggling being in school. And here's his mother trying to do the same thing, and I'm struggling. You know, and I wanted to quit thousands of times. I wanted to walk away, and if it wasn't for Denny Gedwell, I would have walked away. But through his support and whatever light he seen in me at that time was what helped me to stay and to follow it through. And at that time, you're right. And then there was write-up saying, oh, Native people don't graduate from high school because they're not smart enough, or they don't go through university because they're not good enough, they're not smart enough, whatever. And that was always within my being, and I thought, I'm tired of hearing that.
Yeah.
But it was also like, okay, not that I had to prove anything, but I had to prove something to myself. And I was doing it because I love my kids enough. I did it for my children. And you know, that was a big deal, because it was like, how am I going to get a job? How am I going to feed them? And how am I going to do that being a single parent, too? It's like, that was a big deal. But I'm grateful to the ceremonies. I'm grateful for the medicines, because I was going to ceremonies at that time. And I truly believe that's what helped me to stick it out and to follow through with it.
Yeah, the healing from, if you didn't know how to heal from that kind of psychological abuse, verbal abuse, you know, those systemic obstacles that they try to put in front. If you didn't, if you didn't have your healing, do you think you would have made it?
No, I would have quit. I think I would have ended up going to the dark side. I think I would have just went to alcohol. But the good thing is, when I came to college, I had already quit drinking, because I had already started going to ceremonies. So that was that was a bonus for myself. I wasn't into living on the dark side.
Yeah, and that, and so the culture pulls you through, and and the culture is what, you know, gives your children the distinguished attention and recognition that they get now, because the culture has valuable knowledge that can be shared and can be transferred into the institutions if only they would open up to it. And and that's what I think you were pioneering. You were kind of making the way, like you said, going first, right? Making sure that people didn't be, that no longer were you ashamed, but now you're saying, look at the culture, what it teaches us, how it stands us up, how it helps us to heal. And then we can go forward in life with this pride rather than this, this shame. So you were undoing the shame cycle. You were bringing an end to that, what they call intergenerational trauma, eh?
For sure. And then today, when I, being in this college, I see lots of brown faces, but they're the real Indians that come from West Indies. They're the primary population that's in this college now at this point. And, you know, I was teaching a class, and the three quarters of my class was from the West Indies. And I says to them one day, I goes, oh, I finally get to teach the real Indians about my people. And they just all smiled at me. And so, but when I shared our way of being, they understood it. So that's the other thing. And the other thing is, the systems never wanted other nations of people to know who we are, because they would identify and they would learn about what has happened to us. And so I'm grateful for that experience that I got to be able to teach here. I can teach here if I want to. I just want to do something different. But I'm but in the First Nations Center here at Fanshawe, you know, the people that work here, and they're the ones that truly have held me up. And that's what I told Fanshawe. I'm not doing this for you. It's my people that put me here, not you. Because one woman said, oh, you can wear your traditional regalia once. I went, excuse me, I don't ask permission from no one. I said, this is my land. You know, Fanshawe College is on my grandfather's territorial land. No, you need to look at what it is that you are doing. You need to learn more. Higher education? Well, you haven't educated yourself. Truth and reconciliation? No, you need to reconcile with me. I don't need to reconcile with you. And so there still needs to, we still have a long ways to go. But I take my hat off to First Nations Center, because there was no such thing when I was going to school here. And so I'm here to support them, and I'm here to help them to learn and to continue to learn and to understand how important our cultural ways of being are, and our ceremonies and our medicine, so that they can support other First Nations people that are going through this system. And we don't have to give up who we are to be able to get an education. And if these other nations, the people can come to these colleges and universities, and the red carpet comes out for them, but for our people, we still have to struggle. And if they can come here and they don't have to give up their language, they don't have to give up the way that they dress, they don't have to give up their food, they don't have to give up their religious way of being, they can still be who they are, still come here and get an education and still get lots of support. Well, we're First Nations. We're not second. That all that support should be right there. But the cultural support needs to be there. There needs to be more people such as myself to coming to these institutions. We need more of our people to step forward that have that cultural knowledge and who
mm-hmm.
believe in the empowerment of our medicines and our ceremonies and our language. So it's slowly getting there, but it could still move a little faster for me. That's just me.
Well, I know you said you didn't want to be just a checkbox. You know, it's just
mm-hmm.
here we are. We're in the age of truth and reconciliation. So Fanshawe decides they're going to award an Indigenous person a Distinguished Alumni Award and it's a check it off. Check, you know, here's a checkbox. We've checked
mm-hmm.
it off. We've done our part. We've acknowledged Indigenous people. And what you're sharing with us today is well, not really, right?
Yeah. Well, we'll see what they do because they don't know what to do. They're struggling right now, and they're 100% uncomfortable. And my thing is good because, you know, acknowledge how you do things. Oh, no, you're thinking that we're all going to be the same. Well, we're not the same. We're First
mm-hmm.
Nations. We do things differently. We are different. We deserve to be treated differently with respect and integrity. So they are struggling,
mm-hmm.
so we'll see what they do. But they still, that person that's ahead of that gathering still hasn't talked to me. And that's quite all right. It doesn't matter to me. You're not hurting my feelings.
When is the award supposed to be given to you? When are you supposed to be?
September 18th. So I'm going to have my gathering on the following Saturday. And we're going to have it here at the college. And I'm asking my friends who are pipe carriers to come. We'll have a feast. I'll have a giveaway. And, you know, I want to share my story because my story is important and will plant that seed, especially for my grandbabies. You know, I'm inviting both Native and non-Native people because there's a few non-Native people in my life that have supported me in different places that I've worked and who truly respected and honored the work that I did. And I think it's important for them to be a part of that celebration of life is the only way that I can see that. And for me to be able to truly embrace and to honor where I have come from, where I am today, and how I would like for the future to be.
Yeah, and what you're saying is it's not just about you. It's about honoring your culture. It's honoring that
mm-hmm.
knowledge and those practices and those things that helped you to become the distinguished person that you are today. Why so many, you know, congratulatory remarks came off of your Facebook posts, you know, and people were cheering you on. But
mm-hmm.
you know, and one thing you can look at it as an individual and say, what an honor for Liz Akwenzie. But you're saying, well, yeah, but here's the bigger honor. It's the culture in which we're born to. It's the background and the knowledge and the practices and the things that really make us who we are. So we have to give honor to that as well. Because without that, that's kind of, I think, how you said it was my culture that and my people that made me distinguished,
mm-hmm.
not Fanshawe College.
It wasn't me. Yeah, and not the college. But the other thing is around to honor my mother.
Yes.
You know, because she didn't have those opportunities. And my mother only
Very
had
true.
Grade 10, and she got that when I was older. But what
mm-hmm.
I appreciate about my mother, oh my gosh, she had beautiful writing. And I had found a note she left at my house one time, and I found it in the drawer, and I have it hanging up on my fridge, and I look at it, and I say, thank you, Mom.
Mm-hmm.
Because I said years ago, I don't want a life like my mother. I want my life to be different. This can't
mm-hmm.
be how life is supposed to be. And I was able to shift it and to move it and to change it for my children and for my grandbabies. And my mom always supported me in everything that I did. So I know her spirit will be there with me when we have that feast and have that celebration of gathering the people, you know. And my mom was a very brilliant woman in spite of what she had survived. And I used to always tell her, Mom, I could never have survived what you have survived. And it's true. And
mm-hmm.
she was still able to do the best that she could to. And she believed in my work, my greatest fan, in the work that I do, whether she understood that or not, but I know she felt it. So, you know, that probably will be my big celebration. You know, it's not just honoring my mother, but all of those women in my mother's day and age that didn't have those opportunities. But they worked hard to keep their kids fed and clothed and housed. They did whatever they could to help us be safe. They did the best that they could for what they knew and understood. So that's pretty awesome.
That is very, very much so. So your ceremony will be on, what's the date after?
Whatever that Saturday is. I don't have a calendar in front of me. So the 18th is a Wednesday, 19th, 20, 21st.
I certainly believe that your name means, Nisitankwe means understanding woman. I think today's interview and what you've shared with us today and your perspective has given the listeners, certainly the listeners and the people who will be listening to this podcast, a great understanding, something that, you know, we don't really think about. Sometimes, you know, when people get awards, it's like how lucky we are that the university or the college recognized us. Without really kind of maybe thinking it through to the depth that you've given us and in some insight into today. So I thank you for bringing that understanding forward. So you're living out your name from my perspective.
Oh, for sure. But because, and then my own Ida name, Deludutz, means she who reasons and she who sees both sides. So both those names truly describe me and how I live my life. And how can I not embrace those two names, you know, on my mother's side and on my father's side, you know, and I say with respect to Fanshawe College, I think their intent was good, but I mean, the intent, you know, good intentions, they still need to follow through. They still need to talk to us and have conversations, because the good intent also got our land stolen. You know, our kindness got disrespected. So, but it's still learning for them. And, you know, they can do whatever they want, however they're going to do that celebration. And, you know, we're going to do it our own way. And that's the whole intent of the First Nations Center, is we'll honor our people the way that we honor them. And maybe this will teach them something, but we'll bring that good energy and that good medicine into this institution. So maybe it'll create another pathway for our Native students, that they can graduate even from these programs and they can wear their own regalia. You don't need to ask anybody's permission. That would be my big hope.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, you'll have to keep me posted on whether or not the college gets back to you, because that would be a really good move if they actually came forward and said, let's work together on this. Tell us how we can do it. Tell us how we can move forward. That would be just really groundbreaking. And you know, you did it 34 years ago. Why not do it again, eh?
That's right.
Break ground and move it forward to something else. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
I'm not going to be quiet. I'm not going to settle. No more.
Oh, I was right there when you got your voice back.
Yes, you were. You wish you'd done? Oh. But that's the thing, right? Most of our relatives will be quiet and just accept the status quo.
Yeah.
But when you're empowered through our medicines and through our healing and our wonderful way of being in the world and in our knowledge, no, we don't need to be quiet. No, and I don't need to worry about whether I'm going to hurt some European settler's world. Too bad, you know? Too bad, so sad. Then you need to go do your own healing around that. I'm not here to make life comfortable for you. You have already took lots from us. It's But you want to come and learn? Then come and learn. I have all the time in the world. I have no problem helping you to
mm-hmm.
understand. But you're not leading us no more. We can lead ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're quite smart, intelligent, wonderful human beings. We know, and we know both sides. That's the wonderful part.
Yeah, and that's quite the education. That's gonna, you can't get that anywhere else, really. That's awesome. Well, Liz, I'm going to thank you for coming on the program today and doing this podcast with me, because I think, you know, a lot of people are going to have to rethink, you know, themselves and about award giving, right? Are they really
yeah.
honors, and who's being honored, and or is the institution fulfilling a checkbox just because it's National Indigenous Truth and Reconciliation Time, and so
yeah.
you know, we're going to show our good faith by giving an Indigenous person an award. I think, you know, these are just perspectives, and people have to navigate and have to really think and reflect on what is it that, you know, that what's it all about, like for each
yeah.
and every individual, right? And I think your perspective
yeah.
was worth today's program's time and attention. That's why I wanted to really chase you around a bit and say, come on, let's do this. Thank you for sharing.
You're
That's
welcome.
Great. Always great. Always never a dull moment. Always great to talk with you. We'll be talking to you some more, I'm sure. So
yes,
I'm going to
you
wish
will.
You well. Yeah, keep me posted on what's happening with your award, and
uh-huh.
how I know you're going to do it at the Indigenous Services Center.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me know the date, time, and some details when it comes
okay.
time. Okay. So you take care. Gunalunkwa. Onigiwahi.
Onigiwahi.
Or Bamapi.
Bamapi.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Oh, yeah. God.